40 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is AP News. I'm Rita Foley.
Explosions rocked two air bases in Russia this morning. According to Russian media, three servicemen reportedly killed. One of the explosions is said to have happened at a base that houses nuclear-capable strategic bombers that have been involved in launching strikes against Ukraine. No word from authorities in Russia or Ukraine about this. The first strong measures to limit Russia's oil profits are taking effect today. The West is punishing Moscow for what it's doing in Ukraine. The AP's Jennifer King.
Western nations imposed new restrictions on Russian oil on Monday to pressure Russia over the war in Ukraine. The price of Russian oil is limited to $60 a barrel, well below current prices, and some Russian oil can't be sold at all.
The FBI is working with investigators in Moore County, North Carolina, to try to find out who shot up two power substations, knocking out power for thousands of people. The AP's Donna Warder.
In a news conference carried by WTVD, County Sheriff Ronnie Fields said the damage is being investigated as a criminal act.
Folks, we're living in some challenging times. Challenging times that I never thought in my 40 years in law enforcement we would be seeing things and dealing with folks that are dealing with things that we're dealing with. But unfortunately, we're going to have to deal with this.
Fields says no one has come forward to take responsibility.
I can promise you to the perpetrators out there, we will find you.
Duke Energy says the power outage could last 4 days. I'm Donna Warder.
Raphael Warnock is the first black U.S. senator from Georgia, and he hopes to stay in the Senate by winning Tuesday's runoff election. But he has to defeat another black man, Republican challenger Herschel Walker. Sesame Street legend Bob McGrath has died. He was 90. McGrath was a founding cast member of Sesame Street. This is AP News.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get him a shirt from Untuck It. Untuck It shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep him looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with their super soft flannels, wrinkle-free shirts, performance shirts with stretch, and cozy sweaters that are all perfect for right now. They even have a line for her. Find the perfect gift for every guy on your list at one of 80-plus Untuck It stores or at untuckit.com. Untuck It. Shirts designed to be worn untucked.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. When the prospect of divorce becomes a reality, you need a partner that you can count on. If you're a man in this situation, consider contacting Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men navigate complex legal matters for 30 years.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys. 404-793-0000. Online at CordellCordell.com. 1 Glen Lake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta, Georgia.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote, get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, and our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Being a father is an honor, a challenge, a duty, a celebration, and a testimony. I want to be legendary for you because I found everything to live for.
That's dedication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Governor Evers is expected to ask the Department of Natural Resources Board for permission to create PFAS pollution standards. It would be the first step toward regulating forever chemicals in Wisconsin water. Conservatives on the board blocked an attempt to set those limits earlier this year. The DNR is trying again after the federal EPA set its own PFAS guidelines. The owner of a sausage shop in Ryo is sentenced to 1 year in prison after pleading guilty to not paying employee tax withholdings to the IRS. Krista Johnson of Cambria also has to pay more than $350,000 in restitution and fines. In sports, Marquette beat Ball State in the college women's volleyball tournament last night. Wisconsin hosts Quinnipiac tonight. Also tonight, the Bucks take on the Lakers. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow is a product of Courier Newsroom and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for this Monday, December 5th. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Thanks for rolling with the punches. A few technical difficulties as we fire things up on Monday, and every so often you have to unplug something, plug it back in again, reboot. And I mean, that's just the host, much less any of the machinery. Anyway, coming up this hour, my old colleague from the Wisconsin State Senate, Julie Lassa, who's now the State Director of Rural Development for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and Paul Hambleton from St. Croix County on a proposal by Republicans to reaffirm support of the Second Amendment, because apparently all of the other amendments don't need supporting. You may recall that on Friday, I expressed my, shall we say, extreme displeasure at a story by the Associated Press, which essentially, you know, romanticized the quote-unquote real Americans who are Trump supporters, but who also don't seem to have a problem talking about violence if need be, just to get things the way that they want. Well, now they have this proposal before the St. Croix County Board that's going to come up this week, possibly, and I talked to Paul about that, and we'll hear back some of his comments. And it really takes us to the subject of, I mean, where's the bottom? How low is low? How low does this get? Not just to talk about violence, but now in light of what Donald Trump said over the weekend, again, the question must be asked, where is the straw that breaks the elephant's back on this? Let's not sugarcoat what Donald Trump proposed over the weekend on his tiny social media network. He wrote the following, quote, and wait, before I quote again, remember, he's lying in big chunks of this, but here's the quote. So with the revelation of massive and widespread fraud and deception in working closely with big tech companies, the DNC, the Democrat Party, do you throw the presidential election results of 2020 out and declare the rightful winner, or do you have a new election? A massive fraud of this type and magnitude allows for the termination of all rules, regulations, and articles, even those found in the Constitution. Unprecedented fraud requires unprecedented cure. Those were the words of Donald Trump. He put the confession in writing, confessing to the crime of wanting to terminate the Constitution if that's what's needed to reinstall him as something. We're not going to call it president at that point. I mean, if he had been successful on January 6, 2021, or if somehow he could be declared president now, it's not president's not the word that you're looking for. If Trump and his most active supporters, the ones who would excuse violence, were to get their way. Now we have to talk about this from two aspects. Most people will focus rightly on the Republican Party aspect. No Republican elected official should get a pass on this. They should be asked, do you denounce this? Yes or no? And it truly is a yes or no answer. The other question is, from my standpoint, what needs to be said about the media coverage of this unbelievable, unprecedented, downright treasonous claim, or the lack of media coverage? For example, on Sunday afternoon, after this was all out there, the New York Times, their political section had three different stories listed. None of them involved what Trump said. In fact, nowhere on the New York Times homepage was there a story about this. In the Washington Post, it was in the politics section as the second story, after first giving credibility to Elon Musk and the quote-unquote Twitter files about Hunter Biden. And the Washington Post story was, White House rebukes Trump's suggestion to suspend Constitution over 2020 election. I'm sorry, Trump's suggestion? It wasn't a suggestion, and it wasn't suspending the Constitution. It was terminating. Over in Axios, again, another established national political outlet, it was the second story. Again, after talking about Elon Musk, Kanye West, now Yee, and the anti-Semitism, racism that's running rampant on Twitter now because of Musk. And yet, I can only say, and I say this in all seriousness because you know I'm right, imagine if Hillary Clinton had said this still 2 years after 2016 when she lost. Imagine the GOP wouldn't just be, you know, screaming with their hair on fire. They would be looking for an excuse to jail her. They didn't chant lock her up, you know, just for giggles. There are people there that would really want to, even if they know it's wrong, they just know it will help them. And yet, on all the Yap Yap shows on Sunday, Dave Joyce of Ohio, congressman, was the only one who was really challenged by George Stephanopoulos. Let's listen to a bit of it. Can you play that, Aaron, or no? I'm going to say no. So he was asked and said that he would still support Trump if he were the nominee. He doesn't support him now, but he would support Trump if he's the nominee. And Stephanopoulos rightly was incredulous. He's like, really? You'd support somebody who called for terminating the Constitution? Well, I would support the nominee, and I don't think it's going to be Trump. But he could not give you a yes or no on whether to say he would not support Trump no matter what, because he said he would suspend the Constitution. These same things have to be asked of people like Tom Tiffany, Scott Fitzgerald, and Ron Johnson, all of whom played a role in trying to aid and abet Trump's attempted coup on January 6th. They must be made to answer publicly. Does Donald Trump finally disqualified himself from running for the presidency? It's our question of the day online as well at the Up North News Facebook page. We'll take a break, have more right after this from St. Croix County. This is Up North News Radio.
¿Te tiene agobiado tu trabajo? ¿Sueñas con una carrera profesional donde puedas ganar más dinero y te sientas apreciado? Si tu respuesta es afirmativa, entonces Sigma Castings, una división de Sigma Engineered Solutions en Marquesan y Jackson, es tu respuesta. Son más que una empresa, son una familia de expertos dedicados que abarcan continentes. Te harán sentir apreciado de muchas maneras. Por ejemplo, el nivel básico de pago es de $18 por hora, con revisiones periódicas de rendimiento. Después de los primeros 90 días de empleo, tendrás derecho a 80 horas de vacaciones, más 11 feriados pagados. Aún más, ganarías un bono de $2,000 por permanecer en tu puesto. Te ofrecen un paquete de beneficios robusto, con primas bajas y excelente cobertura, y su plan de retiro 401k te va a impresionar. Se está contratando ahora para el primer turno, lunes a viernes, de 5 de la mañana a 2 de la tarde. Empieza tu nueva carrera ya con Sigma Castings en Marquesan y Jackson. Encuéntralos en Indeed o llama a 920-260-8560 y levántate en la mañana feliz de ir al trabajo.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take,
but early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Overcast today with a slight chance for scattered showers. High temperatures reach up to 39. Southwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected again tonight. Chance of snow. Lows dip down to about 27. Chance for scattered showers tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 38. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
Quarter past seven on this Monday morning. This is Up North News Radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow up here on Lake Wissota with a story coming out of St. Croix County. And it was prompted by an Associated Press story with the headline, "No Longer the Fringe, Small Town Voters Fear for America." When the more accurate headline would have been that small town voters are helping to cause fear across America with beliefs that are conspiratorial and downright false and aren't getting called out nearly enough. Instead, they're controlling an increasing number of local governments, including county boards, and the St. Croix County Board is about to take up a resolution reaffirming their loyalty to the Constitution, but specifically just the Second Amendment. So I talked to Paul Hambleton, who has worked with the St. Croix County Democratic Party. He's in the AP story. And I began by noting to Paul that the article says, quote, "It's no longer left versus right, Democrat versus Republican," says John Kraft of St. Croix County's Republicans. "It's straight up good versus evil." And yet I don't see any evidence, actual evidence of what this evil is that they're running against. So isn't it more that it's simply factual versus wrong?
Yeah, you know, I think broadly I agree with that, it kind of my background as a teacher as well is that, you know, that that's not something unusual that you encounter in working with kids, high school kids, that you're talking about something that's counterfactual or, you know, is the beginning of what may become, we might call it conspiracy theories, but it starts small. It's people who start to believe misinformation or disinformation or simply have it wrong. And I think this is my sense of it is this is you have to make so many assumptions about things to get to the point where John is or where Scott Miller or where Mark Carlson are. You have to create a world that is by and large counterfactual. You know, I think St. Croix County is made up of peace loving people who love a rural lifestyle, small town lifestyle. To a degree, they're a minority in our county of folks who have this really, really extreme idea. They're accumulating guns and canned goods in their basement, and they have I'm going to call it a theology. In fact, that's in the article as well, that, you know, they think we're nearing the end times. They use language like that. So, you know, it's a challenge to how do you have a conversation with somebody whose worldview and is so counter to counterfactual, number one, but even we're looking at the same thing and we're coming up with such giant different conclusions. Right?
And in doing so, what you have is a group of people who, as they go deeper into the echo chamber of hearing that misinformation, they want to take action. And one of the first steps of action is electoral politics. And now running for and unseating several county board members, not just in St. Croix County, but across Wisconsin as well. Say what you will about whether the things they believe are factual or conspiratorial or flat out wrong. They have chosen to get involved and to this point have been successful at it because they have decided not to be as apathetic as other people are about things like local elections.
Yeah, I agree. And I would add to that, this is a, let's call it an, you know, I'm going to say trend because I don't want to say ideology or something, but the thing that comes up in the AP article, a fair amount, at least on the side, when I was trying to respond to some of this is menace, creating a climate of fear. Creating a climate where people don't want to speak up. They don't want to be political because they're afraid of becoming a target. And I hear that bouncing back to me in all kinds of ways. Well, we just need to ignore these guys. Well, we just, you know, we can't engage with them because it'll turn into a fight. My husband is like that. And I don't know what to do with him. You hear this kind of conversation. I think a lot of us in St. Croix County, folks have lived around here for a long time. We know folks. We know a lot of people. They're our friends. They're people we care about. And I think that was one element of the story that humanized this. Some people have been a little critical of that, or humanizing these people. But the fact is, they're our neighbors. They might be my uncle. In fact, my Uncle Dean, who's in the story in the video section of that story, I love that guy. He's a Trump supporter, lives in Minnesota. And, you know, we've had a lot of conversations. I'd say he's a little bit more concerned with things after January 6th. And he doesn't like seeing, he's 91 years old. He doesn't like seeing what's happening. He doesn't like the divisiveness. But he still wears his Trump hat. And that's, you know, so for me, it's partly how do we balance this in our personal lives and our families and our relationships with then having some kind of conversation that we can steer toward actual policy, actual problems we face in the world, instead of, you know, these kind of ghost things like, oh, we're going to be a sanctuary now for guns. I mean, aren't we already? That's what the Second Amendment is.
So in doing this, in inflating the conspiracies and the erroneous information and everything else, you talk about having conversations with people and understanding them on a human level. When it appears the mindset of a lot of folks on the extreme right is to dehumanize people and to turn them into them, you know, the others, people right. who aren't like us, you know, how Mandela Barnes is different and everything else. And they'll say, you know, the election was rigged. But to say that, you'd have to believe that your neighbors who are serving as local election clerks are in on this when they see that these are their neighbors, not people involved in some kind of conspiracy. And so, again, I don't expect you to have the answer to this, but it seems like one of the challenges is to get people who get sucked into this to somehow once again humanize their neighbors with whom they don't agree with politically.
Yeah. That is. And you know, I mean, there's irony in it because a lot of these folks, I'll say in the article, as it talked about Wilson, the evangelical church in Wilson. I grew up in an evangelical church myself in Minnesota. And, you know, that's kind of what I thought religion was about. The Christianity I grew up with was about compassion, about forgiveness, about reaching out to people in need, and about living your life in a way that just isn't about you or your own fear, but it's a life where you're doing service or you're trying to help others. I kind of want to know from some of these folks, where is that? Because that's, you know, that's the Midwest Christian value that I think, regardless of what particular, you know, place you came up in, or whether you're still a churchgoer or not, those are the kind of values I think that we see in Wisconsin and in Minnesota. And where is that? Because you're right, this requires dehumanizing people, and it's as old as the human race, that somebody that you're afraid of, you turn them into an enemy, you dehumanize them, and then you're able to we could go on, Pat, about
To humanize this to some degree, when I talk to people about bridging these disagreements with somebody with whom you disagree politically, the first thing I always remind people is that everybody has anxieties. And while, for example, with race relations, we want to talk about how very privileged white people are compared to, you know, others who have had to face institutional racism and everything, right away there's a certain sector of white people that say, don't you dare call me privileged. You know, I worked hard, you know, so they do have anxieties that need to be, shall we say, acknowledged. And right. then maybe we can provide the education on how fortunate, privileged they really are. Or is that too tall an order? And once they've got these, a certain set of anxieties, it's like there's no talking to them.
Yeah. And I think there's kind of, maybe more than two, but I'm going to say two ways that this gets used is I do think that, and back again, that's my experience as a teacher, kids or sometimes parents that I dealt with who are angry and upset about something, if I spent enough time really listening and trying to understand what their concern was, you know, there's a root there. There's something there that then I can actually start to address and we can get past, you know, that anger. And I think that is for many of our citizens, our fellow citizens, our neighbors, that's a path you can follow because they really, you know, they are afraid. And if they can find a way to agree to disagree, or at least come to terms where we understand. But I do think there's another element, and this is the part that I think maybe is even a little more frightening for me, is that I think there are people, you know, I mean, we are all afraid of things. And if you want to motivate people, you make them afraid. That's a common tactic in a lot of places. And I fear that some of this stuff is really, I'm going to call it cynical, a tactic that is used to influence people. Certainly Donald Trump comes to mind immediately, that does he really believe some of these things he's saying, or is he using this as a tactic for his own political purposes? Mm-hmm. That becomes a particularly damning accusation, I think, at some point. Because I think what we see with the MAGA Republicans is very much a deliberate effort to frighten people, to divide people, and it's just so blatant and public and obvious about it. So that's where we see things like Second Amendment stuff. We see right. transgender so, attacks on transgender.
So let's go right into that Second Amendment sanctuary matter, because that is what's about to appear before the county board. So despite everything we just talked about getting to know each other, having conversations, the fact of the matter is this is something that's yep. going to come before the board and it can in fact be an impediment to public safety, as we learned after the recent shooting in Colorado Springs. Is there going to be a robust debate and vote about this, or is it your concern that the skids are greased for this Second Amendment sanctuary motion to pass?
That's my concern, that the skids are greased. You know, if there was a way to delay this, to have a conversation about it, to have a community meeting about it, to talk about what the implications of this are. I do think that even has potentially economic implications. I mean, I've heard that from a couple folks already that I'll mischaracterize it when I say this, but it's embarrassing to St. Croix County to have this kind of divisive politics happening for something that seems, you know, on the face of it, if you look at what they're putting forward, it seems like it's basically just asking the county supervisors to reconfirm their oath. But even that kind of performative politics, if you look at what the commentators, the public voices on the John Kraft side are saying, they are talking about revolution. They're talking about the collapse of society, that we need guns to defend ourselves from a tyrannical government. And, you know, the question, who is that tyrannical government? Is that the county board? Is that our state representatives? Who are these people that you're afraid of? So there's really, once you go down that road, that's the problem. But I think we need a longer.
Paul Hamilton from St. Croix County, we talked to him late last week about this. And again, it's not a true sanctuary amendment. It simply reaffirms support for the Second Amendment, but a sanctuary amendment might not be far behind. Julie Lassa after this on Up North News Radio.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio, VO5.
Let's do it on the dance floor. Let's do it.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha, live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m., right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM.
I'm Rita Foley with an AP News Minute. Russian media is reporting there were explosions at two air bases in Russia this morning. Three servicemen killed. One of the bases has nuclear-capable bombers that have been involved in launching strikes against Ukraine. The FBI is joining the investigation in North Carolina, where two power substations were damaged by gunfire. The power's been out for thousands of residents. The AP's Jennifer King.
It could take days to restore electricity to tens of thousands of people in Moore County, North Carolina. Authorities say power was knocked out when somebody deliberately shot and damaged two power substations on Saturday. Federal, state, and local authorities are investigating.
No word yet on who did this or why, but Moore County Sheriff Ronnie Fields has a message for whoever did it.
I can promise you to the perpetrators out there, we will find you.
He was heard there on WTVD-TV. Sesame Street legend Bob McGrath has died. He was 90 years old.
Looking for the perfect gift? Get him a shirt from Untuck It. Untuck It shirts are designed to be worn untucked. They're the easiest way to keep him looking sharp and feeling comfortable. You can't go wrong with their super soft flannels, wrinkle-free shirts, performance shirts with stretch, and cozy sweaters that are all perfect for right now. They even have a line for her. Find the perfect gift for every guy on your list at one of 80-plus Untuck It stores or at untuckit.com. Untuck It. Shirts designed to be worn untucked.
Hi, this is Joe Cordell with the law firm Cordell & Cordell. When the prospect of divorce becomes a reality, you need a partner that you can count on. If you're a man in this situation, consider contacting Cordell & Cordell. We've helped men navigate complex legal matters for 30 years.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Atlanta area attorneys. 404-793-0000. Online at CordellCordell.com. 1 Glenlake Parkway Northeast, Suite 975, Atlanta, Georgia.
Are you dreading going into work every day? Do you want a career where you can earn more and feel appreciated? If you answered yes, then Sigma Castings, a division of Sigma Engineered Solutions in Marquesan and Jackson, is your answer. They are more than a company. They are a family of dedicated experts that span the continents. Here are a few ways they make you feel appreciated. Entry-level pay is $18 an hour with regular performance reviews. After 90 days, you get 80 hours of vacation plus 11 paid holidays. They will give you a $2,000 sign-on, stay-on bonus. They offer a robust benefit package with low premiums and great coverage, and their 401k will blow you away. Now hiring first shift, Monday through Friday, 5 a.m. till 2 p.m. Start your new career today at Sigma Castings in Marquesan and Jackson. Find them on Indeed or call 920-260-8560 and wake up happy to go to work.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Well, this is going to be fun, getting to talk to an old friend who I haven't visited with in a long time since we both served in the Wisconsin State Senate, by and large. Julie Lasser represented Central Wisconsin for a number of years and now is the Wisconsin Director of Rural Development for the U.S. Department of Agriculture and joins us now. Hello, Julie.
Good morning, Pat. It's good to be with you. Like you said, we haven't chatted in a long time, so it's a wonderful opportunity to talk with you this morning.
Oh my God, just catching up during the break just now that you know you had a child while we were serving in the Senate together. I had just become a grandpa at that point. That daughter is 18, my grandson is 16, and I'm like, how did that happen? Because neither one of us is clearly aged, right?
I know. it's just amazing.
Yeah. Look, Julie, you don't need me to you know, sugarcoat this. You have been nothing but a tireless advocate for rural Wisconsin as a state senator through your time before that and through what you're doing now. Now you're doing it with the USDA. And so we wanted to learn a bit more about the work that USDA Rural Development does and the role that you're playing in it. So think back about 10 days or so to Thanksgiving dinner when somebody says, now, Julie, what are you doing these days? What do you tell them?
So I tell them that I have the honor of serving President Biden and Vice President Harris in the administration as the State Director for Rural Development. My appointment was made about a year ago. And I love working with all the folks that we serve in rural communities all across the state and the staff at Rural Development, because we do such important work. And I think that is what is really key, is the fact that this administration has really talked about how rural America is the backbone of our country. And so many of the programs that we have at Rural Development are really geared towards helping rural individuals buy homes, find affordable housing, help communities put in or add on to libraries, buy a new fire truck. And we invest money into rural businesses to help grow the rural economy from the bottom and the middle up. So it's a wonderful job. I love it.
And it is primarily about the investing, not so much that, you know, USDA does something, but that USDA is a partner either in funding or planning or what have you, which again is so in line with what you did in the state Senate when you were so active on the Economic Development Committee. You were always on the side of public-private partnerships whenever possible, whenever they could be win-wins. And the USDA, by supporting loans to businesses through banks and credit unions and lending pools, this is right in your wheelhouse.
Oh, it is. And that's why I enjoy going to work every day, because I know that the work that I was so passionate about in the legislature, I get to continue working on through USDA Rural Development. And that's why I'm so glad that you had me on this morning, because I think so many people, when they hear about USDA, they think about food inspection and things like that. And that is really important work that we also do in the department. But through rural development, we really focus it in on making our rural communities stronger and improving the quality of life. And really, rural development has, it stems from President Franklin Roosevelt when he created the REA, and brought electricity to rural parts of the country. That is where our historical roots are in rural development, and we're continuing to make a difference today.
So along with individuals and businesses and communities, there are also particular areas. We'll talk about rural broadband in a second, but I want to do healthcare first. Mm-hmm. It was recently National Rural Healthcare Day, and we had passed along the news that there would be millions more coming to Wisconsin's rural hospitals, where, again, between demographic and labor challenges, there is definitely a role for assistance from the USDA and others. So tell us, what's the latest on that?
Yeah, so we were really proud to announce that Wisconsin, in this latest emergency rural healthcare grant rollout, we're receiving $13 million for communities all across the state of Wisconsin. The largest grant award was for St. Joseph's Hospital in Chippewa Falls for nearly $9.5 million. It's to help them increase patient care capacity, long-term sustainability, and to address the adverse impacts of COVID-19 on opioid substance and alcohol use disorder treatment and recovery. So we know that that is going to make a big impact. And not only will it help in the Chippewa Falls area, but it is where they're also going to be doing outreach to other counties across the state where they have a footprint. So it is really going to be, I think, a game changer for St. Joseph's Hospital in the type of care and treatment that they can offer to rural patients.
Oh, and it is so necessary. I mean, just speaking, from what I know of through my own experience, that in something like labor and delivery, having a wife who's an OBGYN, mm-hmm. the amount of places that are ending their OB services, makes it especially challenging. So it is really worth it to support the ones that are sticking with it and doing it. So let me turn to rural broadband, and I gotta say first, I almost feel like I should apologize to Senator Tammy Baldwin, because whenever I do talk to her, I talk to her quite frequently in her role when she was chairing the Senate Appropriations Committee on Agriculture and Rural Development. And we almost always end up talking about rural broadband. And I'm sure there are other facets to it. And you've already uh-huh. described some of those facets. But we keep coming back to it anyway, because that is such a key, not just for businesses, but for healthcare, education, and frankly, attracting new people who can work from home. It seems like we're always talking about this, but just as you mentioned the REA earlier, I guess we're doing it because it is such a basic necessity of modern commerce and life.
Right. And so much of our world, as you said, depends on having access to quality, high-speed internet that's affordable. And that's really what rural development does through our telecommunications program, is work with communities and with telecom providers to provide service to those individuals and businesses who really need that type of service. And I think, for high-speed internet, to us, is the way electricity was generations ago. It's a game changer. And you need it these days to be able to compete. And whether it's working from home, having a business and selling your products online, to having farmers being able to use high-speed internet for precision agriculture, and for students, it's that distance learning. I heard stories during the pandemic where you had communities who were sending out hot spots in buses, and then the parents would park with their kids in the parking lot in order for them to get access to the internet. And or they're going to a local fast food restaurant to be able to get access. We need to do better. And that's why, one of the reasons why this administration and our electeds are doing that type of important work and providing us with the resources that are necessary to see high-speed internet expand.
We're talking to former State Senator Julie Lasso, who is the State Director of Rural Development for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, giving her a leading role in advocating for resources that help folks all across rural Wisconsin. Help folks is what I want to emphasize next year, because I think back to a story we did on broadband being expanded in Boulder Junction. And the reason that they made it work was they stopped waiting around for somebody else to bring it to them. They got involved, advocated on behalf of themselves, looked for the grants, the assistance. They had a lot of good things to say about the agencies and the people that helped them with it. But again, it's the way to get your help best is to help yourself as much as possible. And the USDA has something called the Rural Partners Network, if I have that right. And what I'm getting at, Julie, is there's a lot that you have to offer, but people can't be waiting for you to just waltz into town and say, hey, I got this stuff for you. This is where you need local leaders to start to make a plan and to communicate with you about their needs.
Right. And I think that is what's really key. I mean, in rural development, we have over 50 different programs to help with, housing, business development, community facilities, and all of that. But if people don't know that we're there and have programs that are available or take the time to go on our website, it can take some time to just spin their wheels and for people to become frustrated. And that's really where Rural Partners Network is. It is an initiative coming out of the White House and to link rural communities and rural people with federal resources and programs and making it easier to navigate, because we know that so many people, whether they're local officials, business owners, or just someone living in a rural community, there's only so much time in the day to do research and to do outreach. And some of these grants and applications can be complex. And so what we're doing through Rural Partners Network is shortening the distance between rural residents and businesses and community leaders with federal agencies, and really working to make sure that we have a strong connection to make sure that they know about the resources and programs that are available, that we're there to help them and to get them answers to questions, and hopefully see those additional resources and investments flowing in. But yes, people have to take responsibility in reaching out. And that's why I'm happy to be doing this program with you today, because the more that we can get out and do outreach, talk about our programs, the more I'm really hopeful that people will take advantage of what we have to offer, as well as what our other federal partners are, as well as the state.
And it doesn't just have to come from a unit of government, like a local county board or something. Mm-hmm. Community networks or any kind of collaboration among leaders, residents, civic and business organizations, nonprofits, service providers, development agencies, and others. So, I mean, this is something that can start in many different ways. But what is right. Is there a first best way for people to first try to learn what options are available from the USDA? I mean, you couldn't have an easier website, rural.gov. I mean,
right, rural.gov.
Is about it. Is there anything else people need to know about finding out more information to maybe try to get the ball rolling in their community?
Yeah, so they should feel free to reach out to us, send us an email, give us a call. Our website has our contact information. Rural.gov is a fantastic resource for people if they're looking at what type of programs, funding opportunities, assistance. We also have six offices around the state that people should feel free to call, make an appointment, come in and chat with us, or invite us to one of your local government meetings, chamber meetings. My staff and I, we just want to make sure that we're getting out doing the outreach, because we want to make sure that people are utilizing our programs, because we know that they make a difference. And we've seen and heard the success stories because we know that they do make a difference.
And you know, you can do this because, I mean, you and I have both knocked on thousands upon thousands of doors in rural districts. Mm-hmm. And right. So you're not doing that part now, but you're still having these myriad conversations with folks to try to, you know, educate and build support for something. So it really is, you know, you've taken your Madison experience and you're putting it to good use.
Absolutely. And I think that what could be better than helping to connect rural residents and rural businesses with resources that can help them grow and improve their quality of life.
Exactly. And again, to learn more, rural.gov would be one of the first places to go. Julie Lassa, so good to see you again. Miss you. The legislature was a better place with you in it, but the USDA is awfully lucky to have you too. And thanks so much for spending some time. Hope we can do it again soon.
I hope so too. We have a lot of programs to talk about.
All right. Count on it then. All right, Julie. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Thanks, Pat.
We will be back with Terry Bell from our news department to take a look at the weekend in review and kind of preview this week's news. That's all coming up in just a couple of minutes on Up North News Radio.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
It's Friday.
Oh, it is Friday.
It was a short week, and it still feels like it was a long week.
And we did it.
We did. Well, we're almost
it.
We almost did it.
We're still gonna get through today, but we did it. We live to tell about it. We're having fun.
Yeah. All kinds of fun things planned for today.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Right here on the Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Weather in a Moment brought to you by Wishkosh, providing technical assistance to workers, help with OSHA contract language, referrals to legal and health professionals, and assistance on safety and health. Call 414-870-3060. That's 414-870-3060.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Slight chance for scattered showers today. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected. High temperatures reach up to 39. Southwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance of snow. Lows around 27. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow. Chance for scattered showers. Daytime highs approaching 38. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
Maybe a little Lee Ritenour might be a nice way to kind of wrap up our Monday morning together as Terry Bell joins us now from the newsroom. Terry and I both have worked at Channel 13 in Eau Claire at some point in our past, and here we are under the same roof here. Terry, good to have you. Good morning.
It's good to be with you, Pat. Good morning.
We're going to spend Mondays kind of looking back at the week and setting up the week, and I have a feeling quite frequently that's going to include some sports. And I'm going to start with volleyball because I know you're as much a Badger volleyball fan as I am.
Oh my goodness, yeah, I am. As we go on with these Monday morning visits, especially in the fall, people will be calling to pledging money to get me to talk about anything else but Badger volleyball. I'm a huge fan, and this is a program really worth cheering for. I'm just a great admirer of what Kelly Sheffield has built here, and just what a great atmosphere he's created at the Fieldhouse. It's great for the community in Madison. It's great for all of Wisconsin. I think it's particularly good for women and girls. It's just a fantastic thing they've built here.
I mentioned it last hour, but I'm going to mention it here too. And you may not have seen it yet, but did you see the one highlight between Houston and South Dakota? Houston and South Dakota?
No, I did not. Fill me in. I'd be interested to know.
You got to have to go look at this Houston player. I mean, talk about sacrificing your body. It was the ball was going well out of bounds, but she ran after it anyway, crashed and flew over a table, but hit it in a way that put it back in play. She even made it back onto the court to continue in this nearly 60-second long volley. And then they won the point, and eventually they upset South Dakota. So definitely worth your time. The Badgers now will play at the Fieldhouse again Friday. Is it Pitt?
Thursday night, actually, and it's Penn State.
Oh, Thursday night, and it's Penn State. Good job,
right.
Pat.
So they're going to be running into a buzzsaw. They had a pretty, I wouldn't say easy, every opponent is worthy, but they made pretty quick work of their two opponents last weekend, Quinnipiac and then TCU. Now they get Penn State. Wisconsin beat Penn State twice in the regular season, but that doesn't mean it's tough to beat a very good team three times. So that's their task before them. And then if they do win, they go on to Saturday. I would expect they'd probably be playing Florida. They're the third seed in that regional. And Florida beat Wisconsin back in September in that big match at the Kohl Center that set the attendance record. Now, it's a much different Wisconsin team now. This is a team that was not used to each other at that point in the season. This is a team that's hitting on all cylinders now. So I would expect, a much more well, that match went to five sets. So it's going to be another very tough win.
All right. So a lot to watch on Thursday and Saturday. Looking back at the weekend on the Sunday shows, Capital City Sunday had Dan Kelly on. He's the former conservative state Supreme Court justice who's trying to get back on the court. And A.J. Byport asked him, with the entry of Waukesha County Judge Jennifer Darrow into the race, have people been approaching Dan Kelly saying, you know, she's the more electable conservative and you need to step aside? He said, no, nobody's asked me directly to step aside. And then he went on in my mind to kind of make excuses for his 2020 loss to Jill Karofsky. Let's listen to what he had to say.
And what I would do is encourage people to take a look at the actual, at what we were able to accomplish in 2020. As you know, turnout in spring elections is anywhere around a quarter to a third of turnout in fall elections, except for when there are presidential primaries. And then the turnout for the side that has that primary goes through the roof. So if you set aside races in which there was a presidential primary on the same day as the Supreme Court election, there's only one justice in the history of the state who's gotten more votes than I did in 2020. So I think that if that race had been any other year, that would have been a walk-away win. And there's no one else.
You'd still lost by more than 100,000 votes, though. Mm-hmm. And in Wisconsin, that's a lot.
It is a lot. But again, that's a consequence of taking a highly partisan race and putting that on the same day as the Supreme Court race.
Okay, you can't say I got more votes than anybody in Supreme Court history and then say, you know, but it was a presidential primary, so that's why I lost that particular race. You got to come with one or the other. You can't play both. But clearly, we see where Dan Kelly's going to go. Experience on the court and the votes that he's received previously. But it sure sounds like he's going to face an uphill battle among conservative voters.
This is going to be such an unusual race, and I think turnout's going to be greater than past, you know, off-year primaries and mm-hmm. spring elections have been, based on, you know, what happened, you know, back in November. There's a lot of speculation that kind of interest in races is going to carry over into the spring. It's going to be an unusual race. You know, Supreme Court races are supposed to be nonpartisan. I mean, they technically are. In reality, they don't play out that way so much. But in fact, what you have basically in this primary is you're going to have two candidates splitting the liberal vote and two candidates splitting the conservative vote. That is incredibly unusual, especially on the conservative side. And yeah, Jennifer Doro is kind of like the bright, shiny new newcomer to this race. Got a lot of notoriety from the Darryl Brooks trial. And, you know, whether or not that's going to carry over as the weeks and months in this campaign go on, that remains to be seen. But
and a reminder that it's not a Republican primary and a Democratic primary. Assuming no other candidates get in, it's these four, the two progressives and the two conservatives, and the top two come out of it and face off in April. And depending on voter turnout, that could be the two conservatives. It could be the two liberals. It could be one of each, and we don't know which one. And the only way that's going to be determined is by the folks who actually show up on primary election day in February.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think Kelly's going to make the case that Doro just does not have the experience to be a Supreme Court justice, that she's just kind of riding the wave of her fame right now. And I think Doro's camp could credibly make the case that, you know, Kelly has been offered up as a candidate and lost already once, you know, from a politically viability standpoint, do we want to make that choice again? I think that's going to be.
I'm hearing Rebecca Clefish on the phone here. Kind of the same argument is like, well, you know, we tried this person, and now, you know, everybody with Tim Michael said, let's try something new. Got time for one more here. Let's jump to the DNC. This isn't really Wisconsin specific, but the DNC turning to Iowa and saying, you're out, Michigan's in. So Michigan will be bumped up on the primary calendar. So Wisconsinites who want to get involved in early presidential politics don't have to trudge through Iowa anymore, but they may have to go to Wisconsin. Terry, did you ever have to cover any of the Iowa caucuses or any campaign activity there?
I have not had that experience. I would have liked to. I understand it's one of the most unique political experiences in the country, and that would have been great. My sister lives in Iowa and has participated in caucuses, and I think that's very interesting. However, I think to reimagine the caucus and primary system is a perfectly, I think, fair thing to do. I kind of like the idea, and I don't know if this is on the table, of splitting the country up into regions and every 4 years take the states in different orders.
Maybe do something different. It's about time. Terry Bell, thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
All right. Up next, Earl Ingram in Waukesha, Stephanie Miller in Madison, Todd Alba for everybody else. Have a great Monday. See you tomorrow.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to The Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
My Shiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.